Podcast.
Hello, I'm Miranda Hinckley and this is the National Gallery Podcast. In this month's episode...
I mean, there is this 40-year-old man, he just had a child, he's full of ideals, he wants to idealize this woman, he paints as a goddess, whatever. Then things go wrong, he's desperate, he's uneasy, he's a painter. I mean, I can very well sympathize with this because, you know, to be able to paint, you have to have something inside that you know, sort of pushes you to paint. And at the time, I mean, you know, he was really, really low.
How the women in Picasso's life influenced his art. And?
Well, literally, when I first saw the painting, it was just a painting that I quite liked and just literally liked it on its visual. And then looking more into it, decided it was quite a somber bunch of flowers. It's quite funereal. It's not a jolly, kind of happy wedding kind of bunch.
A preview of one of our more intriguing spring events. But our starter today is that tastiest of subjects, food. If you've visited the National Gallery in the last few years, you've probably noticed our restaurant and cafe have a smart new decor and modern British menu. The makeover is thanks to celebrity restaurateur Oliver Payton, who this month publishes the National Cookbook, a collection of his recipes from the National Dining Rooms. To mark the occasion, I asked Oliver to tell me about his favourite food painting in the gallery's collection. His choice? The Four Elements, an extraordinary series of market and kitchen scenes by the 16th century painter Berkelaar. Here's why.
I pass these paintings every day, and people often ask me what are my favourite food paintings. I mean, there is just no better room in the world to observe the beauty of food painting and depiction. The really strange thing about this painting is that it's not seasonal. You would expect at the time, the lack of refrigeration, that they would have just had whatever was available to them in the Low Countries or the near Low Countries, if you know what I mean. But what you have here is a very, very divergent set of fruit and vegetables, which really are available all year round. And it's about, and that really is a symbol of wealth. It really was about, you know, how successful Holland had become, how successful the Dutch had become. And this concept of showing off their wealth and how they had travelled the world and how they had conquered far-off parts and brought back all these amazing things. There's 62 different fruit and vegetables here, and I think one has to be surprised, really, when you look at our society today and when you see the genuine abundance that was available to people in the 1500s. You know, this is what you're talking about, 1550, something like that, you know, and... I just find that sort of astonishing that without refrigeration they were able to have all this available to them. And also the way fruit is depicted is, this is fruit that's depicted in a manner which is quite real. There's one senses the sort of the ability to reach in and touch the food.
I mean, if we look at that cabbage right in the middle, and she's holding it up lovingly, you know, with all the pride of sort of a mother showing off her baby. It's just incredibly painted, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The detail.
Absolutely. But, you know, also, I mean, you know, when you look at this whole series, I'm personally very interested in the meat one, which is, again...
Let's take a look at that.
What you have here, again, is a kitchen, which is, you know, in full flow. This is a kitchen of wealth here. It's a kitchen in a grand house, in a household where they're about to prepare a feast. It's also, I quite like the way the people's hands are depicted here. The women's hands are, you know, kitchen work was tough work. This wasn't, you know, a Nigella Lawson type of dainty fairy cake, whoopee, let's all have chocolate on it type of affair. This is proper hard graft.
I mean, this is plucking fowl, isn't it? And kind of scrubbing oysters and mussels. You can see mussel shells on the floor. I mean, if we look across now at this wonderful sort of market depiction of game, there's that same idea, isn't there, that, you know, these are strong women, they've got strong arms, and it's not the sort of dainty hands of aristocrats, but yet they're painted with such sensitivity.
This is a scene of prosperity. If you look at the houses around there, this is not a poor neighbourhood. This is an affluent neighbourhood. I mean, this is capitalism. This is about, to me, this is depicting the prosperity of Holland. These paintings really symbolise the graft, the endeavour, the how proud Dutch people were of what they had achieved. And you really sense this from the paintings. These are paintings of sort of self-congratulation in a way, but in a good way, because they're so detailed. And when you look at, in almost all of these paintings, you can tell what the fish are, you can tell what the fruit are, you can, and in some cases, you can tell what the variety of the apple is, and you can, so that's to the extent of the detail of these pictures. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, that salmon looks like you can just, it's ready to go in a pan, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
But to me, the thing that I find most gratifying is how little has changed in what we eat. You know, all this fish is available today still, all the veg, everything we see is still available. And, you know, our society, really, although we've changed, what we're producing out of the land and the earth and the sea, you know, from the sky, is really, by and large, still the same. We might be able to have tuna from the Maldives or wherever else, but by and large, we are still eating the same way. And in some ways, we're sort of reverting back to this type of eating. When I was compiling the cookbook, you know, I walked from the National Cafe to the National Dining Rooms, and I always walked through these paintings here, and they had quite a big influence on me in terms of how I thought, even about food, because I always sort of stop, even if it's just for 1 second, or even if I'm walking, I slow down if I'm in a rush. I just sort of glance at them because it sort of, it reminds me of what I do. It reminds me of what we should be doing in a way. You know, I want to try and create a sort of a balanced how we eat now type of cookbook. I don't think it's not meant to change the world. I don't think food changes the world. I think good quality produce and good preparation is very important. But, you know, I think what we've tried to do is to do an unpretentious cookbook that sort of helps people cook fine quality British food rather than, you know, any sort of let me show you how smart I am type of thing. And part of that influence is walking past these paintings for me, because I'm sort of reminded that little has changed and how important it is to live our lives in a manner which is close to the earth.
Oliver Payton. If you'd like to see Berkelaar's paintings for yourself, come along to the gallery. The four elements will be on display throughout the month. And for ideas on what to do with all that fruit and veg, try the National Cookbook. It's available from the gallery's shops, Oliver's restaurants, or online at www.nationalgallery.co.uk. And now to the National Gallery's major new exhibition, Picasso Challenging the Past. Among the masterpieces on display are a number of nudes, a subject Picasso returned to throughout his life. Picasso hotly denied his nudes were portraits of his partners, but it's interesting to note that his dramatic and frequent changes in painting style often coincided with the beginning of a new love affair. The Catalan artist and lecturer Ava Bosch will be talking about Picasso's women as part of a series of lectures at the gallery to accompany the show. Leah Caribbean visited her studio to discuss this aspect of Picasso's life and work.
Ava, there were so many women in Picasso's life who served as his models that we really could be here all day discussing them, but we're going to concentrate on just two of his partners who gave rise to some truly exceptional pictures. And the first work we're going to look at is the Large Bather, the monumental Large Bather of 1921. Could you just start by describing it for us?
I think that the most important thing to say about this bather is that the canvas is actually bigger than Picasso. I mean, Picasso, I think, measured about 1.75 meters or something like that, and the painting, it's 182 by 101 centimeters. So I think that's important. He makes this woman in a canvas which is bigger than him. And then the lady occupies the entire surface, and so is a very, very large lady, very, very bulky.
And yet this is so classically inspired. It reminds us of classical sculpture. And we know in 1919 he'd been to the British Museum. He'd come to London, mm-hmm. hadn't
exactly,
he? And he'd seen
right,
the Parthenon yeah. marbles. But there's also other things that seem to be in here too. I mean, the sort of huge inflated quality sort of reminds us a bit of the Cezanne bathers, and also possibly Renoir nudes that Picasso, we know, loved. But along with all these sources or potential sources for this wonderful picture, we know that Picasso in 1917 had met a Russian ballerina called Olga Koklova, and they fall in love. They get married the following year, and in 1921, the year that he paints this bather, she has her child, his first child, Paolo. Do you think that affects the way this picture looks?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, in many ways what Picasso is doing here is saying to a certain extent thank you to this lady for having introduced him yet again to a new dimension, you know, the dimension of actually having a child, you know. And so I think this is very much part of this painting. I mean, in this painting, Picasso is idealizing Olga. And it's interesting because Olga is a very petite ballerina from Russia, very sort of aristocratic lady. But in here, you see, he paints as a large woman, which Olga is not. So really, this lady, in terms of actually structure, has got absolutely nothing to do with Olga. I mean, he paints Olga as he idealizes her. I mean, this is a goddess. He is the mother goddess that has just produced a child for him.
And they were obviously at this stage in their relationship, things must have been going fairly well, but by the end of it, it was really quite a bitter relationship, not helped by the model of the next picture that we're going to look at, Marie-Thérèse Walter. This is painted in 1932 and it's called Nude in a Red Armchair. He meets her, doesn't he, in 1927 when she's just 17 years old, is that right?
That's right, yes. Well, first of all, the lady is only depicted from her thighs up. So, you know, it's a half Marie-Thérèse. It's not a complete Marie-Thérèse. And then Marie-Thérèse, unlike Olga, unlike the painting of Olga, she's full of curves. I mean, starts really with this kind of spiral way in which you move through the painting until it sort of stops into the face where he's placed two faces. I mean, that's very typical of Picasso, isn't it? Two profiles sort of beating each other. He did the same thing with...
Yes, a beautiful blue profile with sort of peppermint hair meeting or almost kissing the other side of her face.
Yeah, exactly.
It does put one in mind of artists that we know that Picasso absolutely adored, like Ingres, the Madame Moitessier, with those wonderful bendy fingers. There's this sort of pliable bendiness about her. This, though, is painted, is it not, at the same time that he's still with Olga? I mean, he has this relationship. It starts in 1927. He keeps it secret until 1935, when Olga discovers that Marie-Thérèse is pregnant with Maya, that his second child. And should we be bothered by this aspect of his biography once we know it? Does it diminish what we see in the pictures?
Well, you see, I mean, I think maybe we should go back to the bather then here, you see. I mean, there is this 40-year-old man, he just had a child, he's full of ideals, he wants to idealize this woman, he paints as a goddess, whatever. Then things go wrong, he's desperate, he's uneasy, he's a painter. I mean, I can very well sympathize with this because, you know, to be able to paint, you have to have something inside that you know, sort of pushes you to paint. And at the time, I mean, you know, he was really, really low. So therefore, he meets this beautiful blonde in the street, and then, you know, he gets completely flabbergasted by her. I don't think there's anything so criminal about it, you know. And then, of course, that was the kind of urge which sort of got him again in a different plane so that he could continue being the painter that he was.
So the biography really shouldn't get in the way of us looking at Picasso as a great artist. In fact, actually, it's almost to one side, do you think?
Well, I would say the biography which is in the paintings, yes. I think the history of Picasso is all written in his paintings. I mean, you don't have to read one single word to actually really see what Picasso is about. So it's all there.
Thanks to Ava Bosch, who'll be giving a lunchtime lecture at the National Gallery on Monday the 27th of April. The Picasso exhibition is sponsored by Credit Suisse and runs until early June. Tickets are available at the gallery or online with a booking fee at www.nationalgallery.org.uk. And if you plan to come along, do look out for the exhibition audio guide. Featuring images as well as the usual audio commentaries, it allows you to enjoy Picasso's paintings alongside masterpieces by the many other artists who inspired him. There are interviews with both the show's curators, as well as Elizabeth Cowling, who appeared on last month's podcast, and it was written by our very own Leah Caribbean. One of the highlights of the gallery's spring events programme is a series of fashion shows featuring creations inspired by the paintings. The elaborate costumes are the work of a group of students who, with only a few months to go before the season kicks off, are busy bringing their ideas to life. I went along to the Wimbledon School of Art to hear more from head of costume Hilary Baxter and her student Bryony Thompson.
Well, this morning I've come down to the Wimbledon School of Art to have a look at some of the costumes that the students here have been making. And I'm in the costume studio, surrounded by long tables covered with sewing machines and tailor's dummies, and surrounded by swatches of cloth. And I've come to talk to Hilary Baxter.
We have four groups of students working on the National Gallery project. These are all of our second and third years. The students have been working on this since they returned at the beginning of the academic year, which is October, and most of the work was done in the autumn term. So it will represent, I think, between 4 and 5 months' work for each student, and each one of the projects has a slightly different slant, although they will all end up as costumes which can be modelled and worn at the National Gallery for the forthcoming shows in May. There is fun, there is glamour, there is a bit of sexiness, but all of it is underpinned with a really serious and intellectual approach to the paintings, which means that although some of the work may seem a little hard to perhaps link back to the painting, actually when you think about it and when you understand which painting it is and the approach that students take, suddenly becomes a different view on the painting. And I think that is really what we aim to offer, a slightly different way of looking at things that have become very familiar to us in terms of their classic nature.
Bryony, tell me which painting you've been inspired by.
I was looking at Renoir's Gladiola in a Vase.
And based on that, you've created this, is basque the right word? This amazing kind of confection of fabric and colour.
This is only part of it, I have to say, because the other elements to the design are actually kind of drying or being worked on elsewhere. So I've just got the main corset structure with these kind of elongated flowers coming out of it at the moment.
And tell me a bit about the different materials and fabrics that you're working with.
The actual corset structure is made just kind of the plastic whale bones that exist now and calico, but all the flowers are made out of silks, just various silks. I've got some taffetas and some silk chiffons in there as well to give a variety of textures.
What was it about the painting that has inspired this costume?
Well, literally, when I first saw the painting, it was just a painting that I quite liked and just literally liked it on its visual. And then looking more into it, decided it was quite a sombre bunch of flowers. It's quite funereal. It's not a jolly, kind of happy wedding kind of bunch. While the visuals were taken from that painting, some of the kind of background context was taken from a poem by Everett Smith, which is connected to flowers, but it's more about self-harm and the self-destruction of people. And I'd say then with the influence of the poem as well, it came through, just kind of evolved, really. It started with a self-harm image based on my mood boards, and then going back through, working back the visuals into it to give it more visual relation to the painting.
And is it the colours that relate to the painting for you, or what is it that most...
Yeah, I'd say it was the colours and also these shapes. Obviously I've got the wire frames on the silk flowers here, so the right hand side of the painting, and also when the model wears it, that's on her left shoulder. So as you look at it, obviously if the painting was the right way around, it would be the left side. So yeah, literally took the painting for elements of the design. So it almost looks as if the person is almost wearing aspects of the painting.
So Hilary, give me a sense of what the final show's going to be like. I mean, will there be models there? Will there sort of be a catwalk in the gallery? What will it be like to experience?
There will be about 20 models in full costume, and with the person who made or who designed the costume walking alongside them. We will be coming down the side of the National Gallery, so coming through Trafalgar Square at the very top, up into the gallery. There will be a short parade through the theatre for people who are interested in looking at some of the ways that we've made the costumes, so I think there are tickets bookable for that. And then the costumes will be let loose into the gallery. We're not quite sure how that's going to work, but it is quite probable that the costumes will end up alongside the painting from which they were worked at some point in the evening. But there will be about 2 hours in which there will be models wandering around the gallery in the costumes designed from the National Gallery collection.
Fantastic. Hilary, it sounds really exciting.
Thanks to Hilary Baxter and Bryony Thompson. If you'd like to come along and see the results of all that work, the shows will take place at the gallery on evenings throughout the month of May. See our website for more details. That's it for this episode. If you're planning a visit, don't forget we're open from 10 till 6 daily and 10 till 9 on Fridays, and there's no charge to visit the thousands of paintings that make up the gallery's permanent collection. Until next month, goodbye.